Fowler and Gistre was a culture referrer, one of those 30, maybe 40, out of the 18 trillion who could give you an intuitive idea of what was going to happen, or tell you why she thought that something which had already happened had happened the way it did, and almost certainly turn out right every time. She was being handed problems and ideas constantly, being both used and assessed herself. Nothing she said or did went unrecorded. Nothing she experienced went unnoticed. She did insist, however, that when she was climbing, alone or with friends, she must be left to her own devices and not watched by the cultures. She would take a pocket terminal with her to record everything, but she would not have a real-time link with any part of the mind network on the plate she lived on. Because of that insistence, she had lain in the snow with a shattered leg for a day and a night before a search party had discovered her. The drone, Jace, started to give her the details of the flight of the nameless ship from its mothercraft, of its interception and self-destruction. Fal had turned her head, though, and was only half listening. Her eyes and mind were on the distant, snowy slopes, where she hoped she would be climbing again in a few days' time, once these stupid bones in her leg had thoroughly healed. The mountains were beautiful. There were other mountains on the upslope side of the lodge terrace, reaching into the clear blue sky. But they were tame stuff indeed compared to those sharp, rearing peaks across the plain. She knew that was why they had put her in this lodge. They hoped she would climb those nearer mountains, rather than take the trouble to hop into a flyer and head over the plain. It was a silly idea, though. They had to let her see the mountains, or she wouldn't be herself. And as long as she could see them, she just had to climb them. Idiots. On a planet, she thought, you wouldn't be able to see them so well. You wouldn't be able to see the lower foothills, the way the mountains rise from the plain just so. The lodge, the terrace, the mountains and the plain were on an orbital. Humans had built this place, or at least built the machines that built the machines that, well, you could go on and on. The plate of the orbital was almost perfectly flat. In fact, vertically it was slightly concave, but as the internal diameter of the completed orbital, properly formed only once all the individual plates had been joined up and the last dividing wall was removed, would measure over 3 million kilometres. The curvature was a great deal less than on the convex surface of any human habitable globe. So from Fowl's raised vantage point, she could see right to the base of the distant mountains. Fowl thought it must be very strange to live on a planet and have to look over a curve so that, for example, you would see the top of a sea ship appear over the horizon before the rest of it. She was suddenly aware that she was thinking about planets because of something Jace had just said. She turned round and looked earnestly at the dark grey machine, playing back her short-term memory to recall exactly what it had just said. This mind went underneath the planet, in hyperspace, she said, then warped inside.
That was what it said it was trying to do when it sent the coded message in its destruct pattern. As the planet is still there, it must have succeeded. Had it failed, at least 0.5% of its mass would have reacted with the planet's own material, as though it was antimatter.
I see. Fowl scratched at one cheek with a finger. I thought that wasn't supposed to be possible. Her voice contained the question. She looked at Jace.
What? It said.
Doing.
She scowled at not being immediately understood and waved one hand impatiently.
Doing what it did. Going under something so big in hyperspace and then bouncing over. I was told even we couldn't do that.
So was the mind in question, but it was desperate.
The General War Council itself decided that we should try to duplicate the feat using a similar mind and a spare planet.
What happened? Fowl asked, grinning at the idea of a spare planet.
No mind would even consider the idea. Far too dangerous. Even the eligible ones on the War Council demurred.
Fal laughed, gazing up at the red and white flowers curled round the trelliswork overhead. Jace, which deep down was a hopeless romantic, thought her laughter sounded like the tinkling of mountain streams and always recorded her laughs for itself, even when they were snorts or guffaws, even when she was being rude and it was a dirty laugh. Jace knew a machine, even a sentient one, could not die of shame, but it also knew that it would do just that if Fal ever guessed any of this. Fal stopped laughing. She said, What does this thing actually look like? I mean, you never see them by themselves. They're always in something, a ship or whatever. And how did it... What did it use to warp with?
Externally, Jace said in its usual calm, measured tones. It is an ellipsoid. Fields up, it looks like a very small ship. It's about 10 meters long and 2.5 in diameter. Internally, it's made up of millions of components, but the most important ones are the thinking and memory parts of the mind proper. Those are what make it so heavy, because they're so dense. It weighs nearly 15,000 tons. It is fitted with its own power, of course, and several field generators, any of which could be pressed into service as emergency motors, and indeed are designed with this in mind. Only the outer envelope is constantly in real space. The rest, all the thinking parts anyway, stay in hyperspace.